The Ghost Goal Podcast.
Late drama swept through match week 3 of the Premier League season as late goals from Liverpool and Manchester City earned them late wins away from home, and a late equaliser from 10-man Fulham shocked the Gunners at the Emirates. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast, episode 420, bruh. 420, bruh, right? Chill, right?
420, Alex, yes, chill. You got it.
How's it
you
going, man? I know it was a not so great result, but an entertaining game from in that Arsenal Fulham one for the rest of us. Do you want to start with that one? You know, get a little bit off your chest, or should we do the noble thing and go straight to Liverpool versus Newcastle? I'll leave the choice to you.
Let's go to Liverpool versus Newcastle. Oh, okay. I need some time to blow off some steam before I, you know, or maybe build up to it. I don't know what's going to happen. We'll see, Alex, but. I mean, we had some eventful games. That Newcastle-Liverpool game was definitely the best of the weekend. We got to talk about that first because probably the most unexpected result with the way that the game had been going. You know, I thought Newcastle played extremely well for a large portion of that game. And I think Liverpool got to them a little bit and showed their experience. And I mean, I think they showed that they're going to be a team that's going to be hard to beat for anyone this season. And I was actually, you know, fairly impressed with. I know that Endo didn't have like the best debut, but I think he's going to grow a lot into that team. And that Endo, Szoboszlai, McAllister midfield, it's great midfield, like completely different midfield to the midfield they had last season, different energy to it, different creativity. And it makes players like Darwin Nunez, who came off the bench, or Luis Diaz, maybe not so much Mohamed Salah, who that midfield had been feeding Salah continuously for the last, you know, 5-6 years now. This midfield's maybe adapting more how to play through Luis or play through Nunez or play through Jota. And it might benefit other players in the team. And we're seeing more patterns of play where maybe Mohamed Salah always being the outlet or Sadio Mane when he was there. It's now just a completely different team. We kind of have to look at them in a different, you know, form or vein, because we haven't seen all these players play now with this midfield. It isn't the same Liverpool. And I was impressed with the way that they were able to like find a second burst of energy into the second half. And they used their attacking depth to, you know, even though they were down to 10 men for after the 28th minute, that Van Dijk red, which I think Alex, you and I both think it was a red card, right? No disagreement.
Yeah, he denied a goal-scoring opportunity.
Yeah, denied a goal-scoring opportunity. I've heard a lot of Liverpool fans be like, that wasn't a red, should have been a yellow, but I don't know.
Yeah,
those
are the same people that think like denying of a goal-scoring opportunity is like the same thing as denying a short tap-in. Like, No, he was going to turn and then go like straight to the keeper 1v1. It's a red card. I just wanted to say, though, off of what you mentioned about Endo and the midfield, this is the second game in a row now where Liverpool have had a red card. Now, the McAllister one, did they get that overturned?
They did. He just played.
Right. They must have, yeah. So they got that overturned, but they still had to play the rest of that Bournemouth game down to 10 men, and that's when Endo came on and made his debut. And then in this game, 28 minutes in, you get another red card for Van Dijk. So you can't. I feel like you can't really even like fully like judge Endo or, you know, hold it against him just yet. And he's not even like he's playing badly. It's brand new league. Even though he's 30, it might take a little bit of time for him to be, you know, excellent and have this Liverpool team play better and defend better overall. Because even leading up to that 28th minute red card, Liverpool had gone behind from like a bad mistake by Trent Alexander-Arnold, but they were conceding plenty of chances as well with 11 men. So there still needs to be adjustments made to the balance in this Liverpool side for how they're going to, you know, get the most out of these attacking players while not like overextending themselves and leaving that back line kind of, you know, high and dry to be taken advantage of. So Liverpool didn't have a shot from when the Van Dijk red card happened until Darwin Nunez's equalizer in the 81st minute. Like, there's obviously a strong connection between that red card and them going down to 10 men and that happening, but it still feels like it's just not good enough from Liverpool, and that they kind of got a, they got away like a little bit lucky here from this Newcastle win. Do you think
I mean, of course it was lucky. They were down to 10 men. They could have, Alisson had to make a ton of saves. I mean, it was, but you got to think the performance from Liverpool to be able to keep that to one goal away from home and then end up getting the win. I mean, let alone a draw. A draw would have been a steal. Getting the win? That's highway robbery. Of course it's lucky to be able to pull highway robbery and at, you know, St. James's Park. It's not an easy place to go. So, but I also, the goal that Gordon got was a complete gift. You know, it's not like Newcastle created anything that deserved the goal, really. I mean, they obviously had shots on target and they had chances, but like, I thought Liverpool defended really well as well. You know, I thought they stifled them. And I mean, this game, another day could have ended 0-0 as well, and I wouldn't have been surprised. So, yeah, it was a little bit of a smash and grab, definitely a smash and grab by Liverpool, but it's the type of game that you get wins like this, so it'll give you a huge confidence boost. Like, you were down to 10 men, and you were able to beat one of the best teams in the league. I'd be very happy if I'm a Liverpool fan right now.
Yeah, I guess I'm still thinking they've got a lot to figure out. Like, obviously, Van Dijk's going to be out for a couple games now.
Well, I think they're showing that they're starting to figure it out.
Yeah,
like
maybe.
You can pretty much name their best starting 11 now, and it's like, I think right now up top is the probably the biggest question mark is who's going to start. But I think Diaz, Salah, McAllister, Szoboszlai,
Darwin.
Endo. Yeah, I think Darwin. I think it's Darwin. But
Gakpo hasn't shown much. Jota.
That's what I'm
has
saying. Gakpo hasn't
bit.
Shown much. Jota seems to be a super sub, brings on and always like gives you a great 30 minutes. So I think that Liverpool have the tools. You can see it's there. I think Klopp's pretty much got there. We're going to start seeing the best of Liverpool very, very soon. I think some of these like red cards are obviously throwing off the momentum a little bit, but like you said, I don't think we can take that much from these games because of the red cards, right?
Yeah, I meant that specifically in regards to, you know, judging Endo, you know, the new signing. Like,
but I think you can't judge like the rest of the team's like offensive
right.
output either
True.
After the red card.
Right, they he took off Luis Diaz, right, like basically to bring on Joe Gomez. So you cut yourself a forward short and one of your better forwards as well. I would have taken off Gakpo, but that's just me. Looking at it from a Newcastle perspective, are you worried about them at all? I personally am not. Like they lost the two of the toughest games they'll have all season: Manchester City away and Liverpool at home.
They've pretty much had like the toughest possible openers that you could have, and they've had an incredibly hard run, and they've played the teams really, really well. So, you know, I think for Newcastle, you can see that the pieces are all there. They're going to play well this season. I think they're going to suffer once they have more competitions, and that they're you know, playing game after game after game, and their depth is going to, you know, the Sean Longstaffs and Joe Willock and the players who aren't starting right now and who are on the bench when they're starting to get more game time, I think that the results aren't going to come as easily. But I think for now, they look good, and they're going to probably go on a good run here until, you know, I think till the new year, they'll still be very, very good. So I think this was just like another good showing, but I, you know, the way that they weren't able to kill the game off and then Liverpool came back, you know, I think that's something that they scored 5 goals in their first game. So it's, you know, it's, they have the ability to score a ton of goals. They were doing it last season. I'm sure they'll find that again soon. So they have too many good attacking players not to.
Yeah. And also, as good as that midfield looks on paper, it probably does need some time to gel. You know, Tonali had a great like debut, but he looked a little bit lost at times against Manchester City, which is understandable. That's like, you know, one of the hardest games you'll play in the Premier League. So, you know, him and Guimaraes and Joe Ellington, I would expect after some period of time, I wouldn't even expect it to take that long, but with being thrown straight into the deep end with like this hard of fixtures to start the league was always going to be like tough to get them to mesh right away.
I was actually impressed with Anthony Gordon. I thought
he looked really good.
He looked really good, but I mean, then again, Liverpool were down to 10 men, so again, hard to judge based on that performance, but that was probably one of the best performances, if not the best I've seen him play in a Newcastle shirt so far. All right, Alex, I've been putting it off. I haven't wanted to talk about Arsenal because I'm a little disappointed, and just not necessarily in the performance, but more so in the result, obviously. I thought it was a pretty good performance. I mean, I thought that we were able to create a lot of chances and pretty much keep them to almost no chances. The goals that we conceded were the Pereira backwards pass from Saka in the first minute, which is just unacceptable to have that lapse of concentration. But I do think that has something to do with Partey being that right back, and he'd already pushed up the field to try to be in midfield instead of staying in formation early on in the game. I think that was a problem early on, and I kind of blame Arteta for that. I think tactically something like that shouldn't happen, and that first couple of minutes should always be planned out, and that's happened three times already this season at the Emirates. Teams have scored on us in the first minute, and it's just completely unacceptable, can't happen. And I mean, Fulham played well. It gave them a big confidence boost. You know, we were almost like desperate a little bit at times in the first half, rushed the ball a little bit more than we should have. We're sloppy in possession, and it made Fulham look really good. We still created chances. It kind of traded a little bit back and forth. Jimenez had that beautiful like scissor kick chance that he created for himself.
It would have
that
been
was,
goal,
that was goal
unreal. Of the season.
Yeah. That looked like old Jimenez. You know, I was a little scared after I saw. I was like, oh God, is this going to be like a crazy Jimenez game? But he honestly didn't do almost anything after that. But it was honestly João Paulinho who really kept us at bay. And it took till that, you know, pretty stupid penalty that Fulham gave us, you know, Stonewall penalty, but you know, just stupid to do that challenge there. So, you know, Vieira coming on, super sub, winning the penalty. Then plays 2 minutes later an incredible pass for Nketiah for a tap-in, basically. And, yeah, just bread and butter for Nketiah. And best I've seen Fabio Vieira in an Arsenal shirt. So that was definitely a big positive. I loved the difference that he gave us on the ball, especially against a team that was sitting back. And it seems like he can be a threat and give us a different, you know, point of attack. A lot more than he did last season. We were expecting him to kind of grow into that player last year, and maybe he needed a little bit more time. So hopefully he can carry on from that performance. But it was really just like lapses of defensive concentration. Then for Fulham to get like an equalizer after they've gotten a red card, it was just like a corner kick where we'd taken a bunch of our like high altitude, like our tall players out. You know, Kai Havertz was out. We didn't have Gabriel on the team.
I do like referring just to tall Alex. Players as high altitude players.
High altitude, yes. They are, but no, baffling why we haven't had Gabriel on the team. You know, there's been a lot of rumors of like Saudi turning his head with huge money deals. It's you know, maybe that's understandable if that's the case and why he's been benched. But we've definitely missed him in the team, and it should have been an easy win. We had a lot of chances in the second half. I thought we played a lot better in the second half. Really, you know, Fulham tired, their work rate, you know, slowed down a lot in the 60th minute. And, you know, players like Bassey, who ended up getting sending off, but I thought he was actually fantastic against us the entire game. He just tired a little bit. He started getting super tired in like the 70th minute, which is understandable because he's used to the pace of like, you know, the Dutch league. He's coming into the Premier League. This was his first start. You know, I knew that it was going to be him that was actually going to have a slip up. You know, it just made sense because of, you know, the way that they had been playing and how well he'd been playing. But I think he's going to be great for Fulham. I mean, I think it's a great point for Fulham. Like, it shows that they're a great team, even without Mitrovic in the team. But from an Arsenal point of view, I'm not too worried unless Arteta keeps playing Kai Havertz, just forcing it. Because as soon as Havertz came off, as soon as we took Partey out at right back, moved Ben White into right back, moved Kiwior from left. Oh, that was another one. Why are you starting Kiwior at left back, dude? Like, we have a bunch of left backs in the team, and he keeps forcing players like Tomiyasu and Kiwior to go play on the left. Even Timber, who was bought to play right back. We had a bunch of right backs playing at left back because I honestly don't understand it. I don't think it's worked that well any times that he's done that. I think Tomiyasu's probably been the one that's worked best, but yeah, I just get back to Zinchenko. Tierney's gone. He's already at Real Sociedad, so.
So what you're saying is Arteta out? Is that what you're saying?
No, Alex. I'm a little baffled by his choices in lineup. I think he's been a little bit arrogant. A little bit arrogant in that he's experimenting to begin the season. I think he thought he could afford to do so and still win the games. And it kind of worked, right? Like, we were able to force Kai Havertz into the lineup, try different ways of playing with him. And I think it cost us in this game. And, you know, Havertz had a couple of very good chances in the second half before he came off. The Trossard at nine just didn't work because he'd been playing well, really well in preseason. He didn't really play in the first two games, and then suddenly you start him in this game. Didn't work, had to bring on Nketiah at halftime, completely changed the game when he brought on Nketiah too at halftime. Like, we look a lot better, like we'd been playing in the first two games. It was a lot of weird lineup choices that Arteta made that cost us in this game. And hopefully it doesn't cost us at the end of the season, because points like this are going to be very, very important if we want to win the title. And this should have been 3 points. So disappointed at that. But if in the end we do learn a lesson from it and grow, and he changes the lineup and we play really well next game, then it might be worth it. So we have Manchester United next, Alex. And that's a huge one.
Absolutely. I just want to ask, like, would you expect Arteta to do something like that? Take out Kai Havertz, maybe just slot in Fabio Vieira in his place?
I will be very much, like, surprised if Kai Havertz is in the starting lineup. At least I could see him starting at nine, like as a false nine. I do not want him in midfield in this next game against Manchester United. I think it would be a tactical error that we've seen Arteta do, which is play players that are on high wages that have just come in from a new club like Chelsea. He did this with Willian. Willian was on big wages, and I don't know, like, if there's like something that, like, he promises these players when they come to the club or to convince them to come, but, like, you can't promise someone a guaranteed spot in the starting lineup if they're not, like, bringing what other players can bring in that position and that are in better form than them. You have to drop them, and these are the decisions that make you, you know, like a top manager. He has to be ruthless here. And I want to see it. I want to see Havertz drop to the bench. He hasn't scored or assisted in his first three games. He's gotten the game time. You know, he's been given a little time to gel. He has looked better, but we have to, like, ease off the pedal a little with him. Stop putting the pressure on him. Give the players who have been there already, who gel with the team, who are playing well, give them time. Like, I want to see Emile Smith Rowe get more game time right now. Like, I hate that I haven't seen him at all this first, you know, and I was hyped for him coming in preseason. Like, there's players that are waiting that could be playing right now and that should be getting game time, and I want to see it. So I want to see Arteta, like, evolve here and not make the same mistake they did with Willian in his first season.
I don't know. Something tells me that he's just going to stick with maybe not the completely the same lineup, like Kiwior out for Zinchenko, since we saw Zinchenko back in this game. And then maybe Jesus up top instead of Trossard. But I would even expect, like, Nketiah to start, like, right from the beginning next week over Trossard, because, like you said, he was just invisible for most
Nketiah
of that game.
I would expect Nketiah to start as well.
Yeah.
I would expect Nketiah to start, Jesus coming off the bench. You know, Trossard can come off
as
the bench.
As a wing option, yeah.
We didn't look terrible with when it was Zinchenko and Nketiah up top and Havertz in midfield. Actually, he was like, he played like a false nine. If he plays that against United, it better fucking work. It better work. Like, that's all I'm going to say. It better fucking work, because he's really putting his balls out there with Kai Havertz.
Yeah. I mean, we were saying in the summer, it's a big risk, but, you know, it's one that Arsenal kind of seem to be in the position to take. But, I mean, that's
Declan Rice, Rolls Royce, man. That guy is fucking unreal. Already just, like, perfect in midfield. I have just loved Declan Rice already. I have no, like, qualms with him. He's been on dropping 7 and 8 performances, like, consistently. He's just a super consistent guy, and I fucking love that.
Yeah. You mentioned you guys playing Manchester United next week. That kind of brings us to United. They had a similar start to Arsenal in that they went behind very early as well. Arsenal fell behind in the first minute. United fell behind in the second minute, and then went one even further and conceded again a few minutes later to go down 2-0, for like the earliest they've ever gone down 2-0 at Old Trafford in the club's history. They instead managed to avoid the upset and, you know, come back and win 3-2. Their opponents, Nottingham Forest, also had a red card in the second half, which helped with Manchester United's comeback. I know you were, like, mainly focused on the Arsenal game, so if you'd like, I can take this one. Or were you watching the Man United game as well?
Yeah, no, I only saw the highlights of this one. I mean, I think it's impressive that United were able to come back. I think it's, you know, big for players like Eriksen and Fernandes to get on the board. you know, both of them. I think Eriksen hadn't played very much this season, but for him to get a start and get a goal, start the comeback, really, because as soon as that goal went in, you know, you could tell that lifted the whole stadium. You know, being down 2-0 Old Trafford that early on, I'm sure the whole stadium was quiet. So when you get a goal 2-1, it's suddenly game on again, and the crowd gets back into the game, and then, you know, you get the goal early in the second half. That's huge. So United did all the right things to get back in the game. And I think for Nottingham Forest, I mean, how many times have I said Joe Worrall's not good enough to be a Premier League center back? I mean, just always. They need to find a center back or two in the last. I mean, they've got them on the bench. I just don't understand. He loves his Joe Worrall.
There's Felipe that they signed from Atletico. He's good when he's healthy. Yeah, I wouldn't be too worried if I was a Forest fan, because just from what we've seen from them, I know they only have the one win this season, and they lost at Arsenal and lost at Manchester United. But you can just see early on, the attacking options they have are just so much wildly better than any of the other teams
so
down at the bottom.
Oh, they're so much better than the other, like, crappy teams.
Like, we had them,
they're going to be fine.
We had them in that, like, first five.
They've got to hold on to Brennan Johnson, though. They can't be losing Brennan Johnson at the end of the window.
Even if they lost him, they have Alanga. Anthony Alanga. Awanyi does not stop scoring, and he can drift out wide and do some things out wide as well. And then Morgan Gibbs-White is, you know, a hybrid winger slash number 10. He can play out wide or, like, just behind a striker. They've got a lot of really good options. So, yeah, if they keep hold of Brennan Johnson, that would definitely help. But even if they lost him, I feel like they still have enough to stay up. But for Manchester United, I'm starting to get worried for Mason Mount. As a guy who likes Mason Mount, I'm starting to get worried because they did,
Chelsea players are
they
shit,
did
Alex.
Look like more settled with the Casemiro Eriksen, like, you know, not pivot in midfield because Eriksen was like getting forward. But it just seems like Mount is going to have to find either, you know, a spot out on the wing, on the right wing, if Antony doesn't improve. Or he's just not going to get in this team, because the midfield balance, they still haven't even finally, like, signed Amrabat, who they've been linked with all summer, and we're not sure whether they're going to be able to buy him because they're waiting to sell a player like McTominay. If Amrabat comes in, then and Bruno Fernandes, you know, continues to play well, scored a penalty in this, and, you know, set up Casemiro's equalizer, then Mount may not, like, they may have spent $65 million on him to just be a rotation option, which I don't want that for Mason Mount. He's better than that. And I mean, I still think I would rather have him than Bruno Fernandes, even though Fernandes is the more talented player per se. Mason Mount just, like, gives you all of that plus an even, like, better work rate. So I'm, like, afraid for him that because Bruno Fernandes is the captain, he's going to get stuck on the bench and not get a chance to, like, prove that he can, you know, make it work playing in this United team, because, you know, they were having bad results and bad performances before his injury, and now the injuries happened. First game back, Eriksen scores to start the comeback and looks good throughout, and Bruno Fernandes even looks better. So, like, let's jump ahead to our, like, way too early predictions. We've talked about Arsenal, now we've talked about Man United. How do you see this one next weekend? When is it? Is it Sunday? I think it's the late game Sunday. Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Yeah. So how do you see this one going? Do you see Arsenal snapping back into form like you seem to be anticipating from Arteta? Or do you think United could, could get a result here?
Generally, this is the type of fixture that whoever's at home has a big advantage historically. So, of course, I'm going to predict us to win. I do think there's going to be goals from United, though. You know, we've been allergic to clean sheets at home, so I think this is the type of game that, you know, it could be back and forth. United could get the first goal, we equalize, we get a second goal, United equalize, and then it goes back and forth for, you know, 30, 40 minutes until someone gets a winner at the end. And, you know, I think it's going to be Arsenal, but And this could also be the type of game where, you know, there's a lapse or two in the first half and someone's up 3-0, you know, because that's happened against Manchester United before. And that has yet to happen to us this season. Like, we haven't really had that, like, blistering start that we've had, that we were having, that was, like, trademark Arsenal last season. Like, we just blitz teams in the first half and we would, you know, score two or three goals and then sometimes teams would come back. But we haven't really seen that so much this season, and I'm waiting for that, like, either Jesus start or something tactically change to click for that to happen in a first half. Let's hope it's against United, Alex. You know?
So what's the score prediction?
3-1 Arsenal.
I think I'm going to lean towards 2-1 Arsenal. Yeah, you could score three. You know, United aren't amazing defensively at the moment. They, like you've been saying for a couple of weeks now, they take a few weeks to wake up and play themselves into some form. But I feel like after the embarrassment of that Tottenham game, and with like some of these changes they've been forced into making with injuries to Mount, and I mean Luke Shaw's going to be out for like a month now, and Malassi is already injured. Like they'll put up more of a fight, but I still think they'll end up losing. So I don't think it's going to be as big of an embarrassment as the Tottenham game was. You know, looking so good in the first half and then just completely, you know, dropping off the face of the earth in the second half. I think they'll put up a decent fight and then, you know, try to hold out for like a 1-1, and then Arsenal will get a late goal, maybe with 20 minutes left, something like that. All right, which teams do we want to talk about next? Because there was a close one for that Sheffield United Manchester City game that I personally didn't get to watch, but if you did, I would love to know what happened that kept City from walking all over Sheffield United.
Well, City were walking all over Sheffield United. Sheffield really didn't do anything in that first half. I mean, they were pressuring City well, you know, kind of keeping City away from the chances, but then they conceded a penalty in the first half that Haaland missed, and right after that penalty, they also had a huge chance that the keeper saved, and, you know, City could have been up 2 or 3 nil in the first half, so, you know, for Haaland to miss a penalty and for there to be two or three huge chances that are missed, very uncharacteristic of, like, the ruthlessness of City. I think it's a little bit has to do with, you know, the early season and just how, you know, sharp they are. But then in the second half, you know, I thought Sheffield United came back into it. As soon as City weren't getting that second goal, they slowly started believing that they could get something out of the game. And you could tell in like the 75th minute, every corner kick, you know, that Sheffield were getting, they were starting to get more corners. They were starting to get a little bit more joy getting into City's box. Pep started making changes, which Pep doesn't usually do unless he, you know, feels like something's going wrong with the game. And then as soon as Sheffield equalized, I was like, yes, you know, super happy. And as soon as Sheffield equalized, I mean, not even 30 seconds, City go down the field, get like an incredible chance that gets out for a corner, and then off the corner, rebound, Rodri, and then they just rip it top corner. Rodri's just so good, and City are so good that the second that they were losing, they were like, nope. And that was what we did last season. Like, whenever, like, it looked like we were on a great run, as soon as we, like, had a slip-up or someone would do something, we would equalize or we would get back in the game. That's what City did here. I mean, it was awesome to watch if you're a neutral, I'm sure, because it seemed like it was almost, like, inevitable that they were going to score the winner immediately, even after Sheffield equalized. So it was depressing, and I was just like, ah, fuck, they're brilliant. I mean, they won the treble last year. It's hard to deny them last-minute wins, even when they get them like that, because they probably deserved it. I mean, it would have been pretty harsh if they didn't get a win in that game, even though Sheffield defended well. And I mean, it showed that, like, they were able to stay in the game, and they're probably not, you know, they're not going to be a team that's going to be, you know, easy to break down and just fall apart like Luton have been so far this season. So I think that's good for Sheffield fans that, you know, maybe they can even stay in it with Manchester City and not get blown out. So they should have belief against any team this year that they can get a result.
Yeah, I've been pleasantly surprised with Sheffield United. I still think they're going to get relegated, but like you said, they put up more of a fight than Luton seemed to. Luton seemed like a mid-table championship team that managed to come up. It's it's rough. It's rough to watch. I feel honestly almost feel
Luton
bad for Luton
fans.
Could
be Derby level. Luton could be 2007
Maybe.
Derby level.
Yeah, they could be.
Yeah.
Unless things change or they sign some players soon. Javier, I want to talk to you about West Ham.
Moises goal. Davide Moises. You want to talk about Davide, Alex?
They've started this season on a flyer. We obviously mentioned how good they were last week against Chelsea when they beat us at home 3-1. They followed that up by going to Brighton, a team that themselves seemingly had started really, really well this season. And they went and beat Brighton 3-1 at the Amex. It was their first time beating Brighton since Brighton came into the Premier League. Brighton just had the West Ham Brighton matchup like on lock. It was 6 points every season immediately for them. But David Moyes has reinvigorated this West Ham team. It's pretty safe to say that, you know, the two main signings that they made using the Declan Rice money, James Ward-Prowse and Edson Álvarez, are absolutely influential midfield signings. James Ward-Prowse went from having two assists in the Chelsea game last week in his debut to scoring the first goal in this Brighton game. And they're getting good performances from their forwards again. Mikel Antonio's got a couple goals to start the season. So does Jared Bowen. And, you know, players like Benrahma are stepping up and playing like beautiful assists, like the one for Bowen's goal in this game. It all seems to be working out for them.
The Conference League like kind of win elevated them a little bit, and you know, maybe they gave them a little bit more belief in the team, and yeah, they look really, really good. They look, even though they are at rock bottom of the possession table in the Premier League this season, Alex, there is a possession table, and they have had like 27 or 28% possession in their games, but they've been winning, they've been playing on the counterattack and working hard. It doesn't seem like they miss Declan Rice that much, so very, very impressive from West Ham. You know, I think they're definitely, I think I said it, you know, they're going to finish higher than they did last season. I'm sure they're going to, you know, push into that second half of the into the top half of the table.
Yeah, it seems more attainable now than it did 3 weeks ago when the season was about to start. We were thinking like they have this money
to
spend. If they spend it, teams are going to know they have it because, you know, the transfer fee was so widely like publicized. How are they going to be able to get the replacements in to you know, get back on track this season? And Ward-Prowse for $30 million is great. Edson Álvarez for $40 million or something is pretty good business. But now they're bringing in Mo Kudus from Ajax, who can play on their right wing. They can have Bowen either move centrally or play Kudus centrally and Bowen out on the right. He's a very versatile attacking player that I think is going to fit in perfectly to this West Ham team. And I think when Mikel Antonio eventually retires, Kudus is a player who's, you know, has a similar play style, very like physical, direct, like pacey player, and uses his physicality combined with his pace to like win 50-50 balls when the ball gets played in behind. He could like sort of take over as like one of the like emotional leaders of like that West Ham team. They just kind of need the center forward. They need to figure that out, and you know, for the long term, because Antonio has, you know, he's done little bursts of good form like he's done to start this season. He's done that before, then gone cold for months. So Kudus will help with that. The other players contributing like Bowen after having not so great of a season last year, that'll help. But I would fully expect for them to, you know, be trying to push into the top half of the table. But I think more importantly is getting that Europa League win so they could get into Champions League. That winning Conference League last year got them into the Europa League places. They could win that, and they could be back in the Champions League after being in a relegation the relegation battle last season. It's wild to think about, but yeah, and it was also just wild to see Brighton be so wasteful. Like, you know, we get like my brain started to shift to consider them to be more in like the echelon of like the top teams, where they've been pretty ruthless like since De Zerbi came in. They create a lot of chances, and sometimes they don't finish as many of them, but when they usually create as many chances as they did in that West Ham game, they usually take enough to score like two or three themselves and have like like the high scoring draw they had with Brentford last season. Remember the 3-3 that was like, it was 2-2 at halftime?
I mean, I think it was a bad day at the office for Brighton. And I think they got caught a little bit off guard and maybe didn't respect West Ham as much as they should have. And I think teams are going to take West Ham a lot more seriously after this, you know, Brighton win after beating Chelsea. So, yeah, good times for West Ham. I don't think too much to be worried about Brighton. I think that they can, you know, they'll bounce back. But they have a really, really hard run of fixtures coming up. So we'll see. You want to talk about your Chelsea, Alex? 3-0 win over Luton?
Not especially, no. We were supposed to.
You're Raheem Sterling, Alex.
We were definitely supposed to.
This was the only game.
Them.
This is the game this season where if you didn't win, that's it. Just give up. So yes.
Yeah. Well, on to Nottingham Forest at home, and even after that one, I don't know if I'll. You can't get too excited.
A couple teams I got to give props, Alex. Villa. They looked really good again. You know, I thought that Burnley were just blitzed. I mean, Villa could have scored 5 goals in the first half. Burnley kind of really just put it together in the second half, got back into the game, looked a different team in the second half. It looked like, you know, company got them back tactically. But Villa's quality shone through, and it was more back and forth in the second half. But, you know, Villa looked really, really good, I thought. And Ollie Watkins hasn't even scored. And they're scoring boatloads of goals. You know, this was a good away win. I think that was another thing that, you know, this is an easy place to go. So to get an away win there, that was big. And then Tottenham, Alex. They were surprisingly very, very good again against Bournemouth. I thought they kept Bournemouth to very few chances and, you know, were able to kind of build their game plan and got their first goal. Madison has been fantastic for them so far this season. Slotted right in, got a goal. I thought this was Kulishevsky's, you know, best game so far this season. I know he got a goal, but he was also just, you know, a menace down that right wing. And it kind of feels like Tottenham have goals around the team. You know, it feels like that where Kane was the outlet always before. They're developing a way of playing where it's not all about the striker and it's all about, you know, everyone else in the team kind of, and, you know, maybe whoever's playing in the middle right now, like Son for Tottenham, is a little bit more of a creator for the wingers and for the wingbacks. So it's interesting to watch from Tottenham. They're developing as a team, and it's kind of annoying because I feel like they're going to be hard to beat this season. They're going to be, you know, in it for top four, I think.
Really?
With the way that they're playing right now.
Okay. Remember when they were top after 3 games last season and then lost like 4 games in a row and Nuno got fired? Or was it 2 years ago?
No, yeah, I think it's a little bit early, yeah. But I just say like, but that was with Nuno and they were winning games like 1-0 and looking like shit.
Let me put it this way. Just like I'm not counting out Newcastle for top four because they lost 2 of their first 3 games, I'm not like going to say Tottenham are in it for top four.
I'm not putting them in. No, I'm not putting them in it. I'm just saying so far the way that they've looked, they look good.
Yeah,
you know,
they have.
That's all that I'm saying. Give them props.
All right, Javier. Do you have a fantasy segment of the week for us this week?
I do, Alex. I do have some picks that I have for you guys. So I think a few of my my picks last week went well. I think the Malo Gusto, Raheem Sterling, talking about those guys. You know, I think that they're going to continue to be good to have in your team. I think both of them have already risen in price from like 4 to 4.1 and 7 to 7.1. It's not too late to get, you know, one or two of them into your team. I think Chelsea have a really, really good run coming up, so look at Chelsea assets. I think another team that has a very, very good run coming up, which, you know, maybe some of the bigger players haven't been getting returns, but look at Aston Villa. They've got this Liverpool away game that's coming up next, but after that they have like a great run of about 10 fixtures, very, very good fixtures, you know, bottom half of the table teams. Matty Cash, 4.5 mil defender, got 2 goals over the weekend, and last season he looked, I think it was last season or maybe 2 seasons ago, Alex, but he looked really, really good in fantasy for a really large part. And I remember he was getting boatloads of gold and then he got hurt. And he really, you know, I don't think when he came back, he looked as good, but he looks really good right now. Looks to be a, you know, great attacking outlet that'll get, you know, attacking and a lot of attacking returns and then occasionally defensive returns. So that's a good one for only 4.5 mil. And then Ollie Watkins. I know that he hasn't scored yet, which kind of means I feel like he's just bursting at the seam to start scoring, and at some point he's going to get like a hat trick in one of these games.
I mean, he got four against Hibernian.
Against Liverpool?
No, against Hibernian in midweek last week in the Conference Hibernian, League qualifying rounds. So he's scoring, just not yet in the Premier League. Like, obviously, Hibernian are lesser competition.
I think he's going to be, you know, banging in the goal soon. He's going to go on a good run because of this Aston Villa run that's coming up. I think another team to watch after this Arsenal game, Manchester United have a great run. They have, you know, relatively a lot of bottom half of the table teams. I think look at Bruno Fernandes, 8.5 mil. He's one that, you know, I'm looking to bring into my team. Marcus Rashford, of course, I think he was played on the left wing, looked a lot better in this last game, played on the left wing. They started Martial in the middle instead of him, and it opened up Rashford's game. Who would have thought, right? So that's you know, another one to look to get into the team. I think stay away from their defensive assets. I think United without Shaw are going to be, you know, shitty defensively. Another team that I think I would stay away from is actually Brighton right now. Not just because they lost this last game. I think Brighton have an incredibly hard run coming up. They play against City, Arsenal, Newcastle, and you know, they just lost this game. I think they could go on a little bit of a bad run here, and I don't think that Estupiñán, who everybody has, is going to be getting too many defensive returns. I actually think you should get rid of him right now. Possibly Matoma as well, or if you have, you know, João Pedro or any of their strikers, I might get rid of all my Brighton players, because I think for the next few weeks, Brighton aren't going to be getting a ton of points in fantasy. And the last team that I want to watch and highlight is actually Liverpool, because after the Villa game, they have a great run of games as well. So, you know, there's not that many great Liverpool assets, but if you want one that's, I think, going to be a differential one to watch if he starts in this next game, Darwin Nunez, Alex, you talked about it. If he starts as the center forward, he's going to get a lot of chances. He's going to get a lot of goals, and he looked really good. I think he deserves a start. He's only 7.3 mil, so he's already gone down 0.2 mil from where he started this season. You better believe that that's going to go back up as soon as people start picking him up. So, you know, if you want a cheaper striker that's going to go up in price, look at Darwin Nunez, because he's going to definitely go back up if he gets to run a game. So, Few good fantasy picks for you guys there. A few good ones I had last week. Hopefully some more good ones now for the future. But yeah, that's my fantasy segment for the week, Alex.
Yeah, and Javier, good news. We're right next to each other in fantasy still. After 3 weeks, you're in fifth place on 179 points, and I'm in seventh place on 176.
Yeah, it's still really close.
And my little brother Hugo is beating both of us and sitting in third place. So shout out to Hugo.
No, we don't shouldn't talk about
also,
that.
Also, shout out to Mark Sicily, the Tottenham
Mark.
Fan
yeah.
who we've had on the Instagram Lives before. He's in second place with 192. So yeah, shout out to him.
And my old co-worker, Ulysses.
Oh, is he top?
Tottenham fan, actually. Both of them
God
are
damn
Tottenham
it. The
fans.
Tottenham
Ulysses
fans are top?
Fan
we got to
well.
Stop this, Javier.
I know.
Okay.
If you look at Ulysses' lineup, Udogi, Romero, yeah, just fucking full of Tottenham shit. Same with Sicily. That's why they're doing well. It's okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That'll change.
We'll allow it for now. We'll call it.
All right, Javier, thank you for jumping on this one. If you want to follow Javier on Twitter, you can do so at JavierRev9. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ASMoss92, and you can follow the podcast socials at Ghost Goal Pod. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and a review. Those help new listeners to find the pod, and we always appreciate it whenever you guys can do anything to help us grow this thing. Enjoy the Premier League games this weekend, everyone, and until next time, see you.